And we're holding at the top of Kuf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. We discussed yesterday a point where a person says that all of his nechassim, that a person writes that all of his nechassim should go to his wife. So we don't mean, we say, it doesn't mean that he means to disinherit his children, it means he wants to make her an apotruka. He wants to make her a trustee, that his children should have respect for her, that she's the one who's going to be deciding what's going to happen with the estate, but not that he actually means to give it all to her outright. And then the Gemara had discussed various other possibilities. What about when it's one son, a younger son, an older son? What about various other relatives, etc.? So we discussed that point. When do we say that if he's giving, writing, or whatever, all of it, then it literally means all of it, and the other ones don't get anything. Versus when do we say that he's just making them an apotropos? In addition, also the Rashbam and various other Rishonim discussed the point that a few blocks ago we said it is possible for a person to give all of his nechassim to one son. So why all of a sudden are we saying over here that would only mean making him an apoturkos? But we talked about yesterday, there are several different possibilities. There's a difference between writing it and saying it. Or the difference, whether he says there's a difference between Wash and Matana, et cetera. There are various possibilities. Anyway.
With the wife, what's people say, I'm making a Apotropos? What do you think Chinese for?
Because the point is, he wants to make it as if you own all the Nechassim in order that her children should respect her more. Especially, they may not even be her children. They may be his children from a different wife, for example. But whatever, by saying this Lashon, we have an Umdana. It's called we have a reasonable supposition that he didn't actually mean to literally give her all the Nechassim and disinherit his children.
On the other hand, does she become one of the Yashim?
That's what we're going to talk about later on. If he gives her a portion equal to one of the other children. Right now we're saying that he gives her all the nechassim. So we're saying he's not actually giving all of it to her, he's just making her an apotropakin. And the same thing with all these other cases, but again, so you have several different explanations in Rishonim how it is that this works, what the difference is between this and a previous case where we said that he can in fact give all of it. So one difference is between writing it and saying it, and another difference is whether he says explicitly or not. If he says explicitly, I'm giving it to her or to him or whatever, not as apotropos, but rather as matana, then it would be valid, whereas if he didn't say one way or the other, then by default it would mean that he means an apotropos. Okay. So now, boy Rava. So now Rava's question is, the bori heyach. What would be the din as far as a body with the same din apply? Now, that's the reason why the Gemara is bringing this whole discussion over here, is because before we had a case on Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph involving where, again, an Arm Mishnah of Yechim and Breika had said it's possible to disinherit one son in favor of another. And we said that applies to a Shchivma. Now, the question is, does it apply to a body as well? And the Gemara had discussed that point, so now the Gemara brings other cases where we see a certain din applies to a shchivna, and in each one of them, Rava asks, does it apply to a bori as well? So, bori Rava, bori heyach. The question would be, you could say when it comes to a shchivna, when he says that his wife should have all the property, then again, it means he wants them to have more respect for her, because you could say in that case that would only apply avav b'bori, but when it comes to when he himself is healthy, hakari ihu, he is still alive, they're going to respect her because she's his wife. Not only as a practical matter that because they have derech eretz for him, they're going to have for his wife as well, but even as far as the limud, the Gemara tells us in Ksubas, we learn from Kabet es avicha ve'es imecha, that it includes also your father's wife, meaning your stepmother or your stepfather, as the case may be, but the Gemara points out over there, primarily it applies only when the natural parent is still alive. So as long as he's alive, they anyway have the mitzvah, mitzvah kabed es avicha, to honor her. So you could say that maybe only when he's a shchivna and he's concerned, well, are they still going to have that same kind of honor for her after I go, then he makes her an apotropos. So by a body, maybe that wouldn't apply.
That's why it doesn't seem like Moshe Rabbeinu doing Yeshua. You
yeah.
get a speech in front when you need to
listen to a scene. Or maybe even by a body. You could say he want mehashta. Maybe even by a body, he would want that they start listening to her even now. He knows that once they know that in the future they're going to be subject to her because she's going to be the apaturpa, so now they'll start developing that sense of respect to her, and maybe therefore would apply to a body as well. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring a proof from a Braisa. A koisa peris nechosav leishtoi. If a person writes that the peris of his nechosim are going to go to his wife, now that can be that Rashbam explains. It can mean either that he has peris right now, or it can mean that he's being matna her a piece of karka in so far as the peris that he's saying that. The karka is going to belong to me, but she's entitled to the payers. Anyway, goyvok subosim and a karka lemechtsav l'shlishvulerav. Goyvok subosim and a karka. Then she collects all her ksuba from that karka, because in other words, we're not going to say the point is we're not going to say that because he gave her that gift doesn't mean that she's moichel the shibud of her ksuba. Normally, a ksuba has a shibud on karka. So fine, then in that case, when he writes that the payers of the nechosin go to her, that doesn't mean that she's giving up the shibud on the karka. So therefore, she'll collect the payers from this, and in addition, she'll be able to collect the appropriate amount of karka for her ksuba. L'mechza l'shlish l'rvia. On the other hand, if he gave her that, he's giving her the karka and the payers, which can be entirely, or it can be only half of them, or a third, or a quarter of the payers, then she can collect her ksubas, then she can collect her ksuba from the rest. So in other words, then from the rest, from other karka that he didn't give her, again, we're not going to say that she was moichel on her shibud. So in other words, even though it wasn't the whole thing, unlike in the first case where it was peiros nechos of all of them, the second one he's only saying a half, a third, or a quarter, the same din would apply.
We're going to show
on the face of
right
it.
Now he's
about giving a matana. Yeah.
Right now he's using less of.
Yeah. The point that Rashbam also explains, you know, normally you should think the other way around. If he gave her a quarter, and all the more so if he gave her a third, and all the more so a half,
that should be hers.
In other words, why is it going in the order l'mechza l'shlish v'l'revia? So it's one of those things, zuv ein sarach l'mazu. Needless to say, if he gave her a whole half, but even if he gave her a third, and even if he gave her a quarter, the reason it says it in this way is because that's the usual lashon. L'mechza l'shlish v'l'revia is the lashon throughout Shas. So therefore, in this braisa also it gives them in that order. Continues the braisa. Kosev kol nechosav leishtoi. Now, what happens if he writes? Now, Tosfos asks anyway. What's the chiddush in it? I mean, of course, then he hasn't given her something exclusively. He's only giving her a part of the payrus of this karka. Of course, you can collect from other karka. So Tosfos learns that actually what it means is he's giving her the payrus not forever. He's giving her the payrus of a particular field for a couple of years. So now, if he passes away during that time, can't the Yisomim argue, you know what? Look, she has payrus from that field for a couple of years. Let her just collect her ksuba exclusively from that, and there's no shibud on the rest of the nechosim.
Even though the ksuba is written down a certain...
If he writes a different field, then obviously they have to respect that. But we're talking about, let's say he didn't. He just said, in general, all my nechosim are under a shibud to the ksuba. So now, can't they say, well, he's satisfied by that shibud by giving her these payrus for a couple of years. No, she's still entitled to collect uksuba from other fields, because she wants to collect uksuba right away. When it comes to payrus, she's going to have to wait. She's going to have to wait until the payrus are ready, where she wants uksuba now, we could say.
We see also that the uksuba is made from when the husband dies. The husband didn't, even though she had...
He took on the shibud from when he was alive. So this is the equivalent of a matnas body. That's what we're dealing with.
So why would we think that this person got her stuff ready, the ksuba ready, let's say that's her, if the ksuba only starts from when the person dies? So if she was eating pears until now, it was just pears that was extra, nothing to do with ksuba.
That's fine, but nonetheless, especially we're talking about over here that he gave her that he gave her X number of pears, you would think the Yisraelim could say, well, then you have what to collect your ksuba from. You don't need anything from us. And we're saying that no, it's not so. Kosov kol nechosov leishto. He continues the Braisa. What happens if he wrote out that all of his nechosim go to his wife? The yotza all of shtar choiv. And afterwards, there comes out a shtar choiv that he owes somebody else money, which came before that matana. So now the order was the ksuba. First came the ksuba when he married her. Then came the shtar choiv. Eventually, he borrowed money and there's a shtar choiv. And now finally came this matana. So now, in other words, the point is that shtar choiv can't override. So the question is, what does it override? Does it override the matana or does it override the ksuba? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Tikra Matanasa V'Tamad Aksubasa. So Rabbi Eliezer says what we should do is rip up the matana and she'll retain her rights to her ksuba. Because why would he write this matana? He wants to be able to improve her position. It doesn't mean that she's moichel the shibud on her ksuba. So what happens then? So we take away this matana, then it means that now if the Baal Choyv comes and collects the property, she's going to say, fine, but I have a prior shibud for my ksuba, so I'm going to be able to take it away from you. So therefore, she would prefer to not have the matana take effect, because if she has the matana take effect, that's how she's going to collect her ksuba. Well, then we have a problem. The Baal Choyv has a prior shibud. The Chachamim say that actually, what happens is, now she rips her ksuba. Rashbam doesn't literally mean she rips up her ksuba. Yeah. It doesn't mean she's moichel her ksuba altogether just because her husband is going to give her a present. It means that if he buys any nechosim later on in the marriage, she'll be able to collect from them. In other words, all the nechosim up until now are under the shibud to this Baal Choyv. If later on he buys nechosim, they're not included in the shibud to the Baal Choyv, but they're still going to be included in the shibud to the ksuba. Because everything that he has is meshubad to the ksuba. So therefore, as Rashbam says, when he says tikra matnasa, doesn't literally mean that she rips up her ksuba. Just means her ksuba is not going to be effective as far as collecting from any of the property until now. Because what's going to happen? Because that got overridden by the matana, basically. Because now the Baal Choyv is going to get here. For the Tamid Amatnasa, now the Matana will still be in effect. But the Matana in the end doesn't end up working because you have a Shibud to the Baal Choyv ahead of it. Therefore, the Nimtzas Karachas Mikan Mikan, so she winds up, as the saying goes, bowled from both sides. In other words, she can't collect either one. She's not going to be able to collect, she's not going to be able to collect from those nechosim on the grounds of her shtar ksuba or on the grounds of the matana. Because the ksuba, in effect, we say she was moichel on because of the matana, say the chachamim. And the matana itself gets overridden by the Baal Choyv. Now, the Ritva points out, if we have reason to know that he did this davka in order to deprive her of uksuba, then we say that not. Then we're not going to say she's automatically moichel on uksuba. We're talking about where it was all done in good faith, and she has every reason to think that her husband was doing this because he genuinely likes her and wants to make sure that she has something. And now it turns out there was a Baal Choyv. Then fine, we can say that she was moichel on uksuba, and it means, in other words, that all the property that exists up until now she can't collect from, and only Mikana Labba. But yeah, if he did it in order to try to play games over here, then we're not saying she's moichel in the first place. So there is actually a different explanation among some Mephoshim that says that when we say Tikrak Subasa, it can actually mean literally that she can't collect her Ksuba at all, even from the Nechasim that she gets later on. Here the Rashbam is saying she's not completely forfeiting her Ksuba. It would just mean that she can't collect from any of the Nechasim until now. But the Ramah explains, and the Meiri says maybe as a possibility, that it means she's moichel her ksuba completely, because when she's moichel on the shibur of nechosim, she's being moichel to whoever owns those nechosim. When she does the mechila, the nechosim themselves belong to her. Well, she's moichel to herself, basically. So now she's been moichel her ksuba completely, and it would mean, maybe according to that, it would mean that her husband would actually have to write her a new ksuba, because of course they can't stay married without ksuba. Whereas according to the Rashbam, her ksuba itself is not forfeit. We just mean that she can't collect from any of the nechosim up until now.
Giving it up doesn't mean you can actually pay for giving it up, just collecting the rights.
Right. Anyway. So Omer of Yehuda HaNachton, now Rabbi Yehuda HaNachton, some say he's one of the Asorah, in some of the lists of the Asorah Rugimalchus, he's on it. There's different lists. There's some Chachamim where everybody agrees are part of the Asorah Rugimalchus, Rabbi Akiva, a Pulsip Sarva Turgamon, a couple of others, but then there's some where there's different opinions, mm-hmm. whether they're included in some lists they have Rabbi Yehuda HaNachton. Anyway, so
he's...
HaNachton means the baker, because the pastor, that was his profession, he was a baker. Anyway. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNachton says, Maiska v'ira adova b'basa choisi kala, such a thing happened involving my niece, a kala. Now, the word kala has a double meaning. It can mean a kala as in she's newly getting married, and kala can also mean daughter-in-law. So the Rashbam understands it the first way. It means that this was my niece, who was also my daughter-in-law. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda HaNachton's son is marrying his cousin, which is perfectly allowed up Yalocha. So therefore, the kala is Rabbi Yehuda's daughter-in-law as well as his niece. On the other hand, Rabbi Gershom takes kala to just mean that she's newly married. The kala in the sense, in other words, that she's just getting married now. Anyway, but you had something like this, where the husband wrote out for her a shtar that says that he wrote all his nechassim, and then a bal choiv came to collect from property that he owned before that matana and after the ksuba. Now, usually, by the way, ksuba doesn't usually take effect until the nisuin. Maybe that's why Rashbam doesn't want to understand kala as in just an arusa, because then what's a ksuba doing over here? Rabbi Gershon, I guess, might answer that, we often find cases, there were cases we learned about in the Masechta Ksubas, and in other places where the ksuba is written and is meant to take effect even from the erusin. Anyway. So the case was brought to the Chachamim, the Omru, and they said, like the Chachamim of our Brisa, Tikrak Subasa, the Talmud Amachnasa, Vinimsas Karachas Mikan Mikan, that the Ksuba, in effect, gets ripped up, again, not literally ripped up according to the Rashbam, but just that she can't collect from any Nechasim until now. The Matana remains, and therefore the result is, and the Matana gets taken away by the Baal HaChovis, and therefore she ends up with nothing of any of the Karaka until now.
But then, why would someone do such a setup?
So she figured he's giving her a matana. She didn't know that eventually the Baal HaChovis are going to come and then take it. And he himself may not have known either that that's going to happen. He may have figured, okay, I know I have Chovis, eventually I'll pay him off. Whatever. The point is that, again, the Ritva is making the point. If we have reason, a Dayan would have to figure it out. It would have to be on a case-by-case basis, the Ritva says. If a Dayan has reason to figure in a particular case that he's doing it in order to play games and prevent her from collecting her ksuba, then no, we're not going to say that she was moichel. But otherwise, the Chachamim was saying, for the fact that he's giving her his karka, she's willing to be moichel any claims to any other karka that he might have. So what do we see from all this braisa? The reason why she doesn't end up getting that karka is because there's a shtar choiv involved, and the baal choiv comes up taking and ends up coming and taking the karka. Her lo yotzal of shtar choiv, implying if there hadn't been a shtar choiv kanya, then she would be koina the property that he gave her. Now, which case are we talking about? Ilema b'shivmera. If you're talking about that the husband, when he wrote this out, was a shivmera, no, v'amet lo yosra la patrupus. On the previous omud, we said that in that case, he's not giving it to her outright, he's only making her an apatrupus. Evidently, then, the Braisa must be talking about where he is healthy when he did this, and still, and was saying that, and we're saying that he's actually giving it to her. So that would answer our question. Here, Rava is asking at the top of the Omud, the Bori Heyach, would we say there's a difference between a Shrivmanah and a Bori? Apparently, based on this, but I say yes. If he's a Shrivmanah, we're saying he's only making her an apotropos because he wants his children to respect her after he's gone. But when he's a Bori and that consideration doesn't apply, it seems from this Braisa she's actually getting the karka. And she would have it if it weren't for the fact that there was a Baal Choyv involved.
Well, if he says the Rush, then she wouldn't get it.
Not a matter of Yerusha. We're talking about he says a Loshana Matana.
Oh.
Even so, we said that if he says a Loshana Matana, right. Nevertheless, he's still making her an apotropos. Now, again, we said there can be cases, there can be a difference between, the Rashbam learns there's a difference between saying it and writing it. If he says it, then it means he's giving it to her outright. If he's writing it, then it means more. He wants it to be mefursim. He wants it to be more well-known. And therefore it means he's only making her an apotropos. The Rini Dash had made the distinction between whether he says explicitly, I'm giving as a matana and not as an apotropos, versus where he didn't say that. Anyway, the point is that there definitely is a case, we learned before, that where he says, I'm giving you all my nechassim, we reinterpret what he says to mean I'm not actually giving you all the nechassim, but rather I'm making you an apotropos. Well, it seems that over here by a body it's not so. Otherwise, there's nothing to talk about her forfeiting her ksuba, or forfeiting the ability to collect from anything else other than this, because to begin with, she's not actually the owner of it, just an apotropos. So that would show that, yes, by a body versus a shchiv mara, there's a difference. Shchiv mara, he says, he writes, whatever, I'm giving you, it's really only making her an apotropos. A body, it would mean he's actually giving it to her as a matana. So the Gemara says not necessarily. You could actually say that the Braisa is talking about specifically that he was a Shchivmana. Because again, we had at the bottom of the previous Amud, we had a number of cases where you have, for example, let's say he says this kind of thing to a daughter among all his sons. So let's say he has a bunch of sons and he has daughters as well, and he says one particular daughter, I'm giving you all the nechassim. Does that mean that he's giving it to her outright, or does it mean that he's giving it to her, or does it mean that he's making her an apotropos so her brothers will respect her? And we had several cases like that. Now Rabbi Avira had said that in most of those cases, in fact, she would be koineh. So in the case of a daughter and several other cases over there, the case where you have his wife versus his brothers. So he has no children, for example. So he has, let's say, his brothers would be the ones to yarishen him. And instead he's writing to his wife that I'm giving you the nechassim. Again, is he making her an apotropos so that his brothers will have respect for her? Or is it that he's giving it to her outright? So Rabbi Avira had said in many of those cases, you would actually say that that she is koina. And on the other hand, we had Ravina saying that no, in many of them she's not koina, with a couple of exceptions. So again, referring that to over here, so Rabbi Avira muki lo bakulu, Rabbi Avira would say that the Braisa is talking about one of those cases where he says that she is in fact koina. For example, again, a daughter among the sons, or where the wife is an arush, or is an arusa, or a grusha, or whatever. Where on the one hand, we could say that it means so you could say, does it mean he's giving it to her outright, or does it mean he wants them to honor her? You could argue that if she's only an arusa, he doesn't know her that well yet. Why would he care about her coven? It's more likely maybe that he's more likely giving it to her outright. And the same thing with a grusha. Why would he care about her coven? Same thing. So Rabbi Avira would say that there are quite a few cases where he writes out such a thing, and we don't say it means an apotropos. We say that it means that he's giving her outright. Very well. So Rabbi Avira would say that our Braisa could be talking about one of those cases. And Ravina mukila v'ishtei arusa v'ishtei grusha. Ravina, who limits the scope of that din, would say fine, but at least it can apply to an arusa and a grusha. Now, in fact, in the earlier Gemara, we said that really the only nafkamina between Rabbi Avira and Ravina is really only about a daughter. According to Ravina, if he says to his daughter among the sons, I want you to have all the nechassim, he always writes it, whatever, then according to Ravina, she would actually only be an apotropos, and according to Rabbi Avira, she would actually own it outright. So that's the nafkamina between them. So now the Rashbam says that, since we mentioned before, we use the Loshen, Rabbi Avira, Mishmei de Rav Omer, Bakulu Koni, Levar, he said, by all of them, she's Koina, with the exception of the following. So therefore, the Gemara uses the same expression over here, Bakulu, even though really, the Gemara could have very simply said, they're both talking about where the wife is an arusa or a grusha, because as far as arusa and grusha, they both hold that she is koineh. So the Gemara could have said that, but because the expression before, at the bottom of the previous Amud, was Rabbi Avira says b'kulu koni, except for, so therefore the Gemara uses a similar mode of expression over here, yeah. Okay. So you don't really have a proof from that Braisa whether it would work by a body, because you could say that the Braisa is talking about specific cases where, in fact, by a body or by a shivana, she would be koina outright. The cases where we say that he's not making her an apotropos because it's not so much that he's concerned for her covered, and therefore that if he's giving her the nechassim, it means he's giving it to her outright.
It doesn't mean it's clear that it means you're giving up your ksuba automatically.
So that's the thing. So what we're saying is, if we say that it's an actual matana, which is what the Braisa was implying, Rabbi Eliezer had said
that Rabbi Eliezer had said that no, we say that we override the Matana. The whole point of the Matana was to improve her position, and now that it ends up making things worse for her, because it ends up that now she can't collect from the earlier Nechosim, because the Baal Choyv is going to take them, then we say that the Matana, that we ignore the Matana. Whereas the Chachamim said we can't ignore the Matana. The fact is, we can say that she was in effect Moichel on the Shibud of her Ksuba up until now, or even on the Ksuba altogether, according to the Rama, and therefore that she winds up with no Ksuba and no Matana, and all it is, they're going to need to write a new ksuba, and there's going to need to be a new shibud.
But this whole reason of having a ksuba was to protect her. So the chachamim,
right? So the chachamim are saying in this
statement now that,
but in this case, they're saying he gave her a matana and she accepted it. So therefore, we can't just ignore the matana altogether. Again, according to the Rashbam, it doesn't mean that now she can't collect her ksuba at all. According to the Rashbam, all it means is she can't collect from these nechassim up until now. If he gets any later nechassim, then she can collect from those. Those are not under a shibud of the Baal Chayv. To you. In other words, they got married in Tishrei. He borrowed the money in Cheshvan, and that's when the Shibud begins. In Kislev, he wrote her a Shtar Matana.
Right.
So according to the Rashbam, what we're saying is, now she's forfeited any right to collect from any karka that he had in Tishrei or in Cheshvan. But any karka that he gets in that he gets up until the time of the loan in the Cheshvan. But then any nechosin that he gets from Kislev onward, sure, she can still collect uksuba from them.
Something later on.
Yeah.
After he's
So had it not been for that, then she would be able to win the Baal Choyv. Had it not been for all of that, then when the Baal Choyv comes to collect, then she would say, yeah, but I have a prior Shibud because I was married in Tishrei, and therefore I can take away from you Baal Choyv. Now, the Chachamim are saying that that's blocked because of this, but they're not saying, according to the Rashbam, that she's forfeited her Ksuba altogether. Whereas according to the Rama, yeah, it means that we can say she was Moichel on her Ksuba altogether because in effect she was Moichel to herself because at the time of the Matana, she was still the owner of the property. The Baal Choyv hadn't taken it yet. And therefore, yeah, we'd have to write a new ksuba, and she'd have a shibud from now on. The point of all of that being, though, that we thought that has to be talking about a bari, but no, we're saying even with a shivra, there are cases where he can say, I'm giving my nechosim to my wife, and it means he's actually giving, not just making an apotropos, namely by whether when his wife is an arusa or a grusha, and according to an arusa or a grusha, and according to Ravina, also when it's a daughter among his sons. So the bari could be talking about one of those scenarios. Okay. So the Gemara continues. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Yosef Amanyumi, Omer of Nachman, Halocha Tikra Ksubasa, V'tamed Amat Nasa. The Nimsis Karachas Mikan Mikan. The Halocha, Rav Nachman says, is in fact like the Chachamim, that yes, she can't collect her Ksuba from those Nechosim, even though her Shibud came before the Baal Choyv, because again, she was Moichelet once he gave it to her as a Matana, then therefore she's going to be able to, she can't collect from those. Again, if she gets Nechosim after that, she'll collect from those. Now the Rashbam adds, why does Rav Nachman have to say the Halocha is like the Chachamim? Isn't it usually Halayochid Virab Malocha Karabim? And in fact, with Rav Eliezer particularly, there are actually very few cases where the halacha is like him, because the Gemara explains in other places, Rav Eliezer was shamusi, which means either that he's a Talmud of Beis Shammai, or that he was put in Nidui by the Chachamim, and therefore it's very uncommon that the halacha is like him. Anyway, the Rashbam explains, because further on, the Gemara is going to point out that there seems to be a contradiction between what Rav Nachman is going to say. The Gemara is going to talk about in the next couple of lines. He seems to be contradicting himself as far as another point that he says, and you might have thought to say, the Gemara is going to give an answer, but maybe it's a weak answer. Maybe really he holds like Rav Eliezer. So we want to say that no, in fact, he does really hold like the Chachamim. So therefore, that's why he had to stress the Halacha is like a Chachamim. Don't misunderstand me based on my other statement and think that I actually hold like Rav Eliezer in this case. No, I hold like the Chachamim. Okay. Well, that's the question. Memra the Ozer Rav Nachman Vosa Umdana. So are you telling me Rav Nachman does not follow the concept of Umdana, that when we have that here he said something and we should say Me'omed Adas, we can say we can assume that she wouldn't want to be Moichel Hoshibur just because her husband gave her a present. V'atanya. But we learn in a b'raisa, which we're going to discuss this point more extensively in the next parak, Be'ez Hashem, in a couple of weeks. Haresha holach v'noy l'medinas hayam. Suppose a man's son went overseas. V'shamash, and let's say it was his only son. V'shamash amespinoy. He heard reports that his son had died. So he figured, in that case, I have no yodish. I don't want my brothers or my uncles or whoever it's going to be in the tree over there, as we learned earlier in the parak. I don't want them to get it. V'omad v'kosav kol nechosav l'achayim. So he goes and writes out a Shai Matana giving all of his nechosim to somebody else. And then his son comes back. So what do we do? Matnose Matana. So the Tanakama of the Braisa says his Matana is a Matana. Doesn't matter if he had said explicitly, I'm giving this Matana because as far as I know, my son is dead, then that would be one thing. But he didn't say, so he said, I'm giving a Matana. Well, then it's a Matana. Rav Shimon Menasya Omer, but Rav Shimon Menasya says, "Ein matnasa matana." No, the matana is not a matana. Ilu hoyedesh benoy kayam. Had he known that his son is alive, loy kosvan, then he wouldn't have written out such a star, giving it to somebody else. So now we're going to discuss this point in more detail in a couple of weeks, Be'ez Hashem. But right now, all we need to know for our purpose is the Omer of Nachman halacha Rav Shimon Menasya. That Rav Nachman says that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Menasya, which means that we do go according to Umdana, which means, in other words, we have something where he said explicitly, I'm giving as a matana, but now we override that based on our Umdana das, based on our evaluation, that he wouldn't have meant to do that if he knows his son was alive. So therefore, Rav Nachman does follow Umdana, whereas in our case over here, when Rav Nachman is saying that you go according to the Chachamim, means we're not following Umdana. If we followed Umdana, we'd want to go according to Rav Eliezer and say she wouldn't have wanted to be loichel the ability to collect her ksuba from any property that's available just because her husband gave her a matana of his property. So the answer is, so again, that's what Rashbam had said. That's why Rav Nachman had needed to say in the machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, why he needed to say the halacha was like a Chachamim. Otherwise, we would answer very simply, okay, Rabbi Nachman holds like Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore Umdana works over there and it works over here. But the answer is that no, shiny hosam, because it's different in the case with the wife, the nichala, she would actually prefer the tipokala kala, the kasvinu niyala, the hanu nechasim. She likes the idea that there was a coil going out that he wrote her all his nechasim.
Remarry easier.
It can be because she can remarry easier, but whatever. The point is that shows that she's important to her husband. Shows that her husband really appreciates her, and because of that, she's willing to be moichel the shibud that she had for the ksuba up until now. So she's saying, you know what? Even if a baal choyv comes, up until now, I have that nachas ruach that my husband made me feel good about it, and therefore I'm willing to override my shibud. Okay, so the bottom line is, in other words, so we haven't really proven one way or the other whether a bari is able to do the same kind of thing when he gives the property in the cases where we say where a shivra wouldn't be koine, it would be only making an apotropos, would that apply to a bari as well? So it's not clear from the maskana of the Gemara whether in fact by a bari the same din would apply, and then therefore we say because of the suffix, basically she's only an apotropos. I'm like Chaver Levaraya. The Gemara says Tnan Hosam. Now,
well, this is just by a few words. If you don't write, you make a big mess.
You know what? Lahavdil. This is why lawyers, write and make sure to dot every I and cross every T, and why they write things at such great length. You know, sometimes you look at some of these legal papers and you wonder why on earth do they have to go on with such arichos. You know, the famous joke. You know, you've seen legal size paper, like when you're signing documents for a house or whatever, and they're 14 inch long, the papers, and as opposed to regular printer paper is 11 inches, so the joke goes, because it takes lawyers 14 inches to say what normal people can say in 11. But there is a certain logic behind it, as we see from the Gemara over here, that you don't say something, then you have to construe it, and you have to assume, then you start having arguments what exactly it meant. You spell out everything down to the last letter, then you have less room for arguments.
Yeah. We saw the Rebbe also.
Right.
Things weren't written down by Rebbe also.
Yeah, also true. I've mentioned before, by the way, something that the Sneh says in his introduction to the Prisha. He wrote Prisha and Drisha on the Torah, and he wrote Sneh on Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yeshua Falek, his name was. He was the grandfather of the Pnei Yeshua, and he was an important Rav in his own time. Anyway, he writes, I've mentioned this before, he writes in his Akhdama that one reason why Torah Sheba'al Peh was not meant to be written in the first place is because anytime you write down something, you can't possibly include all the details. There's always going to be some inherent uncertainty where then later generations are going to argue what exactly it meant. As opposed to, when it's Baal Peh, you're in front of the Rebbe, and if you have any question about it, you're going to ask him, and then everything will become clear. Anyway, okay. So the Gemara says, now, the reason why we brought this whole thing in was because of Rava's question, Bebori Heah. So now the Gemara is going to bring another example of a din which applies to a Shchivna, and we're going to ask again whether it applies to a Bori as well, which is again why the Gemara is doing these series of halachas over here. Tznan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Peah, of all places. Now, in Masechta, why we have Dinim Mominus in Masechta Peah, it's one of those kinds of things. You know, Mishnah, the Mishnahis themselves were originally by heart, so we have many times when you have a Mishnah that talks about a certain topic, then you'll have digress to talk about other ones that are similar, that where also it mentions that point. You have famously, for example, in Masechta Megillah, you have Ein Vein, Odorishin, Odorasheni, except for whatever, and therefore you have a whole series of Mishnahis after it that begin Ein Vein, this and that, which have nothing to do with Masechta Megillah per se, but it's just once you have one, then you have a bunch of others in the same vein. There's a lot of places in Mishnayos like that. So here, in Masechta Peah, it mentions a machloikus. How much land does a person have to be chayiv in Peah? And Rabbi Akiva says, kol shehu, even if he has the tiniest amount of land, he's chayiv in Peah, and therefore that causes the Mishnah to digress over there to talk about a number of other dinim that apply to karka kol shehu. So now, in that connection, you have as follows. Hakosiv nechosiv labonav, a person wrote out a shtar that he's giving that he's giving his nechosim to his children. Later on, we'll learn tomorrow about Hashem, the Gemara is going to discuss, are we talking about where he gave all his nechosim or even only part of them? Right now, we're not addressing that point yet. Anyway, he wrote the nechosim to his sons, v'kosiv le'ishtei karka kol shehu, and he wrote it. He wrote in that shtar also that he's giving his wife any amount of karka. Now he's not clarifying, is he meaning that to pay off her ksuba, which would mean it wouldn't pay off her whole ksuba, but it would pay off part of it, or would it mean that he's giving it to her as a separate matana, unrelated to her ksuba at all? With the part that he gives his sons, there's no question, is under the shibud for her ksuba. But the question is, now that he's giving her some land, does that mean that he's meaning that to at least partially pay off her ksuba, or does it mean he's giving it to her as an unrelated matana? So, ibda ksubasa. So the Mishnah says, she's lost to ksuba. Again, not literally lost, but in other words, she's lost the ability to collect from these nechosim. So, she won't be able to collect from the ones that he gave his sons, because again, once he gave her karka kol shehu, as the Gemara is going to explain, then she has a nachas ruach from it, and therefore she's willing that the matana to the children should be irrevocable, and that she shouldn't be able to override that and collect uksuba. Well, that's the question. Mishum de kosav la karka kol shehu ibduk subasa. So what do you mean? Just because he gave her a small amount of karka, would we say that she's mochel uksuba completely and she can't collect it at all? So Omar Rav, the mizak lahen al yoga. So Rav says what we're talking about is where he's mizake to them through her. So for example, you need for example a kinyan sudr in order to make the matana irrevocable. So let's say, for example, she gave her very own sudr to do the kinyan with. Now, how do you do kinyan sudr? You use kelev shokoyne. You use a sudr that belongs to the one who's acquiring the rights. Meaning, in other words, for example, when it comes to mechiras chametz, the rov is acquiring the rights to your chametz. He's giving you his sudr, and with that, the kinyan sudr takes effect. And then you lift it up and it becomes yours momentarily, and he's makna that to you, and with that, and with that he's koina your chametz. The same way over here, in other words, so she's providing the sudr that's being used for the kinyan to the sons. So therefore it means she's putting in so much effort into that they should actually have matana that should actually fully take effect. And he gave her karka kol shehu, and she didn't say, wait a second, that's karka kol shehu, what about the rest of my ksuba? So therefore, implicitly, we can say that it means that she's willing that they should have that matana completely, and not that she should be able to take away her ksuba from it. So Rav says that would be the case. In other words, she still has a ksuba, and she can still collect from any property that he gets later on. But in other words, these two factors, the fact that she herself provided the sudur for them to be koiner with, and the fact that, remember, it has to be Caleb shall koiner, which means in effect she's saying, I'm giving my sudur to those children so that they can do a kinyan with it. And she's willing to accept the karka kol shehu without protesting. Wait a second, this is only kol shehu. That means taking those two factors taken together that Rav says is enough for us to say that it means she's moichel on the shibur that she had on these nechosim up until now, and she's willing that the children should just have them outright. And fine, as far as my ksuba, I'll collect from other nechosim that my husband will get later on. Well, we're talking about whether that's the question. We're going to deal with whether this is by body. Right now, we're talking about, right, we have to figure out, that's the reason, again, the reason the Gemara is bringing this in is because we're going to discuss shkibin av versus body. But we'll get to that. Anyway, Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says you don't even need that she provided the sudur. He's dividing up the property in her presence, where he writes out the nechosim to his sons. He writes out that my sons are going to get my nechosim, and she doesn't say anything. So once he also wrote karka kol shehu, shtika kaida. If he hadn't given her anything, then we would say that she's being quiet and she's not protesting, because the Gemara calls it elsewhere, nachas ruach hasisi labayli, that I'm just doing it, I don't want to start a fight with my husband. But once he's giving her karka kol shehu, then she should say, wait a second, what are you talking about kol shehu? It should be more than that to pay off my whole ksuba. If she's not, then Shmuel says that's the case. It's all being done in her presence. And he's giving her karka kol shehu. So therefore, now there's no reason to say that she's being quiet just because nachas ruach hasisi labayli must be that she's being quiet because she's actually accepting those terms and saying, fine, I'm willing to accept that karka kol shehu as partial payment of my ksuba. And as far as the rest of my ksuba, eventually when my husband gets more nechosim, then I'll collect from those.
This is her future.
Okay, but nevertheless, sure, yeah. Reb Yossi, Reb Chanina Omar, and Reb Yossi Reb Chanina gives a third explanation. As far as the previous one, as far as Rav's explanation, because she's providing the sudur, so the Ritva explains another point, that the fact that she's providing the sudur, that itself is a covered for her. It makes it look as though the whole thing was her idea. So therefore, so that kind of nachas ruach, then, yeah.
This is the thing where when we're done with Solomon Thomas, why don't we just say, we should get back to us, say, now this is back to yours again.
We do. After we're done, we don't keep the Rav's gar at all.
I'm not giving it back to him, but we're not saying anything. It's officially yours now.
We don't need to. Once you give it back to him, obviously you're giving it back to him for him to keep. You don't need to actually explicitly be makne it back to him. So that point, by the way, we learned in Bava Metzia is the subject of Machlokas, whether you use Caleb Shal Koine or Caleb Shal Makna. It was based on how we understand the Psukim in Megillas Rus, where we have the story of Boaz and the Goyal acquiring the rights to marry Rus and be Goyal the fields. So by Yishleif Nala, it says he took off his shoe or his glove. So who does that apply to? Does it mean Boaz took off his shoe and handed it to the Goyal, or the other way around? The Halacha is it means that the Goyal took off his shoe and handed it to Boaz. The other way around. Boaz is the koiner. He's the one acquiring the rights. So Boaz took off his shoe and handed it to the Goyal, and in return, the Goyal transferred him the rights to that he would have otherwise had to acquire those fields that had been sold by the family and to marry Rus. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, so it was not only Rus, it was a field.
The actual thing under discussion over there was two things. There were fields that Ali Melech and his family had to sell because they were poor, and now they should stay in the family. The Pasuk says the Goyal, the nearest relative, should come and redeem them so they stay in the family. So therefore, Boaz first says to the Goyal, we have to deal something with all those fields so they don't end up getting transferred out of the family. Fine, they're going to return to the original person in Yovel, but still, it's a bazillion to the family that should happen. And then Goyal says, fine. And then Boaz tells him, you should know, along with that, you also have to marry Rus. It's a package deal. And then the guy says, no, I don't want to do that. And so therefore, he transfers all the rights to Boaz.
Okay.
He was a closer relative, earlier in the Messiah.
But when he went out, when he left, he was a rich man.
Yeah, he got poor over the years in Moab. Yeah.
But he could sell his field?
Yeah, he sold and sent a shliach to sell his field. Okay. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Returning to the Gemara. So again, so we have Rav says, in order for her to be moichel, means you have to have a very strong thing, a very strong demonstration that she's willing to go along with it. She provided the actual sudder, and she accepted that karka kolshehu. And then by providing the sudder, either again, it shows, as the Rashbam says, that she's very concerned that they should actually get their part, or as the Ritva says, it makes it look as though the whole thing was her idea, and therefore, with that nachas ruach, then she's willing to be moichel. Shmuel is more meichel. Shmuel says, that's not really necessary. Even she doesn't provide the sudder, but she was there at the time and saw what was going on and didn't protest, then that itself is enough reason to say that she's moichel on her sheep.
But we don't know in the past that when she just, you know, when she just wants to make it happen, really she doesn't want to lose her.
Again, that's when, if she didn't say anything, if she didn't give her anything at all, you could say, nahasu achasis of the Bible. But now that he's giving her something, then she should have the ability to say, wait, what do you mean? Something. It should be more. It should be to pay off my ksuba. And she doesn't. Therefore, Shmuel says that's reason enough to say that she's moichel on the sheep.
So I understand the $100 worth of a kaka she's getting now, that she cannot collect. But what's about the other 900? That shouldn't be given.
Again, this means that she's saying, I'm willing to accept right now this $100 worth of karka, which will be a partial payment, right. Which will be a partial payment towards my ksuba. The rest of it, I'm not worried about right now. I'll worry about it later. Eventually, you'll get more nechassim or something. But Rabbi Yossi b'Chanina says, you don't even need that. Even if she wasn't present at the time, but Oymala, where he tells her, take this karka, and he writes out the karka, and he says, take this karka for your ksuba. If she doesn't protest at the time, then it means she's moichel or shibud on the rest of the karka. So each one of them, Shmuel is being more meichel than Rav, and saying, even when she didn't provide the sudder, still you can have a case, which is moichel, and Rav Yosef ben Chanina is going beyond Shmuel, and saying, even if she wasn't there, the very fact that he wrote tli karka zubik subasach, and she didn't protest, is reason enough to say that she's moichel on her shibun. Because this is one of those examples, says Rav Yosef ben Chanina, or actually it really applies to all three opinions. This is one of the things where we say that the ksuba, there's a kula in it. There's a number of things we find where the chachamim are mekel as far as a ksuba, because after all, we have the concept the Gemara mentions in various places, even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married, and she's willing to put up with a lot for it. So therefore, in other words, so we figure out, therefore, she's willing to, so a lot of times she'll be willing to accept less than objectively. A person might say, why are you satisfied with so little? She's going to say, I'll be married. The point is, therefore, the ksuba as a whole, we have many kulas in it. That's why, for example, she can collect only from ziburis. That's why, for example, so now, on the other hand, a Baal Choyv actually did a favor to the guy. He lent him money. He didn't have to. When this husband came to borrow money from the Baal Choyv could have very well told him, I'm sorry, I don't have money to lend you, or I don't want to lend you, or whatever. And he did him a favor and lent him money. Right. Therefore, we should try to prefer the claim of the Baal Choyv over the woman who, after all, didn't... She got married, but she would have been willing to anyway. It benefits her more than it does him. So therefore, so we have various examples in halacha where we say the kulei ksuba. We say there were various aspects of a ksuba where we makel relative to other balei chovos, and this would be an example of it. So you have three different opinions what it takes when he's writing out karka kolshu idduk subasa. You have three opinions what it would take for that mechila to be effective. Does it mean that she had to actually be involved in the kinyan? Does it mean that she was there at the time? Or does it mean even if she wasn't there at the time? So now, tznan, and now we learn in the continuation of that Mishnah in Peah, Rabbi Yossi Omer, in Kibla Aleha, Rabbi Yossi says if she accepted on herself, meaning that she's moichel, the shibur, afal pishalei kosavla, even though he didn't write her anything, he didn't say that I'm giving her any, that I'm giving her any karka at all, ibda ksubasa, then also she forfeits the shibur of her ksuba. So in other words, you could have that he's writing out. So in other words, again, the first part of the Mishnah I had described where he's writing out a document saying, I'm giving my nechosim to my children, and then I'm giving you karka kol shehu. Rabbi Yossi says you don't need the karka kol shehu. If he's just saying, I'm giving it all to my children, and he doesn't say anything, then also ibrik subasa. Well, the Gemara says, Miklal the Tanakama Sava, Ksiva the Kabbalah boy. It comes out then that the Tanakama apparently requires
writing and
it has to be written, and it has to be that she accepts it. Because otherwise what is Rabbi Yossi saying? Otherwise Rabbi Yossi should be saying that even if he wrote out for her Lo Ibrik Subasa unless Kibla. So it sounds like the Tanakama requires both, and Rabbi Yossi is saying that just writing is enough. So now the question then is Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina are all saying that just the very even she doesn't say anything then it's enough. But it sounds like from the Mishnah, it sounds like by being medayek from Rabbi Yossi, it seems like the Tanakama would require her to actually say explicitly, I am moichel on my shibud. So then what are Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina respectively saying that there can be cases where she's moichel without saying so, when we would infer from the Mishnah that she actually has to say, I'm moichel on my, according to the Tanakama, that she actually has to say, I'm moichel on my shibud in order for her to actually be moichel on it.
Yes,
And in other words, if not for that, then we could just say Nachas Ruach Asisi Labayli. Would mean, in other words, that it means she's not moichel on anything. She's not moichel. I just didn't want to start an argument with my husband. Yeah. Tosfos also discusses the point. how do you know? Maybe the Tanakama would say it's enough to write it. And Rabbi Yossi would say it's enough to accept it. In other words, Rabbi Yossi would say, I don't need the writing, but I do need the accepting. But then why would Rabbi Yossi be using the word afalpi? So it implies the Tanakhama is saying you need two factors, ksiva and kabbalah, and Rabbi Yossi is saying ksiva by, and Rabbi Yossi is saying kabbalah by itself is enough. So she accepted this even if it wasn't written. But the question is, in other words, that all three Amiroyim said that that it doesn't require that she's actually Makabel. Just the fact that the Matonim was given and she was involved in the Kinyan according to Rab, or she was there according to Shmuel, or just the fact that the document was written out according to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina is enough for her to be Moichel on her Shibud. But it comes out, Rabbi Yossi is saying that just Kibla is enough, implying the Tanakama is requiring Siva and Kabbalah. Well, then it contradicts all three of those Amiroyim. V'chitei makula Rabbi Yossi, you're going to answer that maybe the entire Braisa is, maybe you're going to say maybe that entire Mishnah, rather, in Peah is like Rabbi Yossi. So in other words, the Reisha would be saying that it's enough to write it, and Rabbi Yossi would be saying, you know what, actually, it's not enough. It's not necessary to write it. It would also work instead if there was Kabbalah. So in other words, Rabbi Yossi would be saying, Rabbi Yossi would be saying, so he'd be saying like this, first I told you that if he writes it, now I'm telling you a different din, instead of writing, there could be that she's Makabel. The problem with that, the problem with understanding it that way, Vatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, Om Rabbi Yehuda, Emasai. Rabbi Yehuda says, when do we say this din? Rabbi Yehuda is coming to explain the Tanakama. When do we say that if he wrote her Kalka Kol Shehu, then she loses her Shibud on the Ksuba? So Rabbi Yehuda explains, Shahosasham, when she was there, the Kibla Aleha, and she accepted on herself that she's willing to accept this. You're giving me Kalka Kol Shehu, and you're giving everything else to my sons, to your sons, then fine, because how would you have a person who's going to have his own mammon taken away from him and not protest? So therefore, but if she was there and she didn't actually accept it on herself, she was just quiet. Or kibla, where then we could say, nahasu rachasisi labayli, I didn't want to start an argument. Or, Rabbi Yehuda says, kibla alev, lahoisa sham, or if she accepted on herself, but she wasn't there, then also she could say, nahasu rachasisi labayli, because she wasn't there at the time, and therefore she's saying, fine, you know, I didn't want to, I did accept it, but I wasn't actually there to see it happen. So therefore, So either way, so Rabbi Yehuda would say, loy ibdik subasa, either way, then she's not forfeiting the shibud on her ksuba. So So the point is, now Rabbi Yehuda is saying a Messiah about different gears says by Medvarim Amurim, which means that he's clarifying what the Tanakhama says. So it comes out then. So it means that the Tanakhama actually does require Ksiva and Kabbalah, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying and Rabbi Yehuda is clarifying that if she was there and not Kibla or Kibla and she wasn't there, Loi Ibdik Savasa, Tiyufta Dekulu. Well, therefore, then this Mishnah and the Braisa with it is a contradiction to all three of the Amoraim that we said before. All three of them who were saying there are some conditions under which we say that she's Mochel on her, that she's Mochel on it when she was involved in the Kinyan or when she was there. Or when it was written, or whatever, it comes out. But now we've schlugged up all three of them. And the Gemara says, "You're right; it's a contradiction." Wow. So therefore, so only if she says "Beferush I'm moichel," then she's moichel. Otherwise, she can always say "Nachas ruach hasisi
lebayli."
That's better. Yeah.
As I mentioned, the Gemara, we were learning back and forth to this Gemara.
Yes. So now one thing that Ashbam points out over here. Now all of this was that we were discussing before what Rav Nachman says. That Rav Nachman had said that you have the case where he gave her a gift, and meanwhile there's Baal Dechoyvus. Then we say that Rav Nachman had passed him at the Chachamim that Nimtzes Karachas Mikana, because again the fact that she receives a Matana means she's giving up Oshibud to those Nechosim, and therefore the Baal Chayv ends up coming and taking those and then ends up coming and taking that. The Rashbam brings over here let's learn the next line and then we'll talk about. Omale Rava Rav Nachman. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, listen, Hor Rav Hoshmul Hor Rav Yisrael Rav Chanina. We have three opinions of Amoraim so far, what the story is as far as when he writes a matana to his sons and he gives her a piece of character with it. Mar Maisvile, what about you, Rebbe? What do you hold about it? Amalei, sort of Nachman answers, Shani Omer, I would say that in that kind of case, even if she didn't say anything, Kibin Shah saw Shutaf Bein Abanim, once he made her a partner among his children, Ibdak Subasa, then that alone, not Chashivos, that he's making her equal to his children, then she's Moichel the Shibur until now. So we don't need, in other words, so it means that now we don't need everything that we said before, that we just said that Rav and Shmuel and Rav Yochanan and Rav Yosef and Chanina are giving various circumstances where we said that she would or wouldn't be moichel on her ksuba. Now we don't really need all of that. Just the fact that it was written, if we go according to Rav Yosi, so Rashbam explains that Rav Nachman would be going according to Rav Yosi. Either ksiva or kabbalah is enough, and Rav Nachman says the reason is because of the chashivos that he's making her equal to his children. Then the Rashbam brings that Rashi explains like this. Rav Nachman is actually following Shmuel. We do find that Rav Nachman was a Talmud of Shmuel. So he's following Shmuel's opinion. We schlugged up Shmuel. That was because that was according to the Tanakhama. But Shmuel can be holding according to Rav Yosi that either Ksiva or Kabbalah is enough. And therefore Shmuel is saying that if she's Makabal on herself, that she was there and she didn't protest, then therefore that's good enough. And Rav Nachman would be following the same opinion. So there's two ways of understanding what Rav Nachman is saying. Either Rav Nachman is saying that just writing it out alone is enough, with the very fact that he made a shutafein abonim, which means not like the various opinions of the Amoraim that we said that she needs to somehow accept it, but rather we would say that writing out itself is enough. Or we would say that Rav Nachman is specifically going according to Shmuel and saying who in turn goes according to Rav Yosi. So Itmar Nami, it's said also that the Amoraim had a discussion about that. Amar of Yosef Aman Yumi, Amar of Nachman, Kivan Shah Saw Shutof and Abonim, once he, the very fact that he made her a partner among his other children, Ibrik Subasa, means that she loses the right to the Shibur of Uksuba. The very fact that he made her a Shutof among the children is reason enough. And again, we have two ways of understanding what Rav Nachman means by that. So now that we established all of that, Bori Rava b'Bori Heyach. So now Rava has the question, what about a Bori? Again, given the point before, there can be a difference between a Shivra versus a Bori. So when he's doing it as a Bori, and he makes a Shutta Feina Bonim, as Rav Nachman had said, would the same din apply? Where you could say that by Shchimra, you would say, because she knows he's not going to have any more Nechosim, and he's going to die, he's not going to get any more Nechosim, so therefore she didn't protest at the time, it means she's willing to forego her Shibur altogether, because otherwise she should have said something. Well, by a body, maybe not. He may well buy more Nechosim over the years. So why should I bother now? Why should I start an argument now when I'll see what happens over the years? Or maybe not. So what do we say? By Shchimra, she knows he's not going to have any more property. So if he's giving her karka kolshehu, and he's not shurtafena bonim, whatever, he's making her a partner among these other children, and she's not protesting and saying, wait a minute, but you're going to die soon, you're not going to have any more nechosim, how am I going to collect the rest of my ksuba? Then it means she's moichel on that shibur, and it means she's not worried about that money from the ksuba for whatever reason. But by a body that wouldn't apply, because by a body she may well think, you know what, he has many more years to acquire property. Alva body savra hodrakoni, so by a body she may think that he may yet buy more karka. Or Juma Hashta Mialesla. Or the fact is right now he doesn't have anything else, and she doesn't know whether in the future he might buy more. So therefore on the face of it she should be moicha, and if she wasn't moicha, then she's moicha on her shibud. So to be sure that Ashbam says, and there's no question if he gets more nechosim later on, she will be able to collect from them. The question is, again, as far as the nechosim, as far as the shibud on the nechosim that he gave his children. Now then the Ashbam brings a different explanation, which is actually the explanation of the Rimigash, that the question is whether she'd be able to collect from nechosim later on, or has she forfeited her ksuba entirely. But the Ashbam says that's a mistake. That's not what the Gemara means. And he says because the Loshen of the Gemara doesn't really fit with that. Anyway, the Gemara says Teku, so we don't really have an answer. So later on, the Gemara is going to bring something from Rav Kahana in this connection on Daf Kuflam of Gimel, and the Rashbam points out if that was as far as whether she can collect later on. If that was the subject under discussion over here, then the Rashbam says instead of saying Teku, the Gemara should have then continued something which is obvious to Rav Kahana was questioned by Rava, and he left it as Teku. But the fact that the Gemara didn't do that, says the Rashbam, implies that they're actually two separate things. So the Gemara says, Hahud Amalahu, there was a man who was a Shrivna, he had two daughters, and no sons. So he said, Paugalibras, he said, half of my Nechosim should go to one daughter. The other half should go to the other daughter. Utlosil itas beperi, and one third should go to my wife as far as the Paris. So as far as the Paris, one third of them is going to go to my wife, and the karka itself is going to go to my two daughters. So the question is, what is that? What's the din is for? How do we apply this as far as the din of the shibud for huksuba? So Iklar of Nachman was Surah, so Rav Nachman visited the Surah, Ula Gabe Rav Chista. He went to visit Rav Chista, who lived there. Or it can mean the other way around. Rav Chista came to visit him, whatever. Anyway, Omale, so Rav Chista asks him, Ki hai gavnamai, what would be the din in this case? He didn't make a shutaf bein abonis, like in the previous case. He didn't say, I'm giving out three parts, and one part goes to her, and one part to each of the daughters, where then we could say she's moichel on her shibur. Here he's only giving her peiros. So maybe she doesn't own any of the karka itself. So maybe she would be entitled to take the karka to pay her ksuba. So Amalei, so Reb Nachman tells him, Hachi Amashmol, this is what Shmuel said, Afilu lahikna la'elam dekel echad b'peroisav, even if he was only makna for one tree, as far as its peiros, where she's going to just have the peiros, as long as the tree exists, ibduk subasa, then she still forfeits her shibur on the ksuba, because at least she does have a certain ownership of the karka. So she does have, she has the right to the peiros of this tree, as long as it's growing, which means therefore that she owns, in effect, she owns the tree to a certain extent, and therefore that's considered like she owns karka, and therefore we have the same din. He made her a shutter as far as the karka, and therefore it means she was moichel on her shibur up until now. Amalei, but Rav Chista says, is that really the same thing? Emo de Amar Shmuel Hasam. You know, you could say Shmuel is saying over there, the Akne Lama Gufa de Ara. Here he's makna her something of the goof of the land. But over here, we're not even talking about peiros that are attached to the ground. We're talking about detached peiros that he gave her. So it's not the same thing at all. Amalei said, Nachman says, metalpli kahamas. Ah, you're talking about a case involving where he's giving her metalplin. That's different. Metalpli vada like kahamina. It's true. I'm not talking about where he gave her only metalplin. I thought you were asking about a case where the dates are still, where the fruit is still on the tree. So then I would say that's Shmuel's din. But you're right. If it was detached fruit, then that would be different. Then yes, she hasn't forfeited her shibur on the karka at all, and she would be able to collect from that karka. Then we would also say though that it means we would say the fruit counts towards the value of uksuba, and then she would get karka to pay off the rest. The Ritva explains a little bit differently. That the peiros were actually mechuber, but Rav Nachman had figured they're still growing and they still need to be attached to the karka, and Rav Chista is clarifying to him that no, we're talking about the scenario we're talking about over here. They are still on the tree, but they're not, they don't need the tree anymore. They could be harvested any time, and therefore Rav Nachman says, you're right, then those would be considered like metalplin. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more cases like this.